Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, my hometown. Out on the edge of the prairie. It's been hot there this last week. Got up to 93 on Wednesday, and that took the starch out of Norwegian bachelor farmers in particular. They don't have hot weather clothing, Norwegian bachelor farmers. They sit there in their denim coveralls and their jean jackets and their work boots under their straw hats. They have never been seen in public in shorts, ever, bachelor farmers. That would be underwear, so you wouldn't go out like that. And they drink hot coffee to cool off. This is their own unique theory. They have their own ideas, Norwegian bachelor farmers, and there's a lot of certitude going on there, so you don't want to ever argue with them because they have a lot to say on these subjects. Cholesterol is a myth, absolutely. There is no such thing as global warming. It was invented by somebody. They don't know who. The government is illegal. Smoking is good for your respiration, and hot coffee will cool you off. They believe all of these things, and we don't even talk to them about that. We just leave them be. It's a hard time of year for my people because we're not comfortable with the idea of vacations, with the idea of indolence. And you are needed for something, and to just walk away and leave the world get along without you is painful. We like to be busy. We like to be occupied. And that's why people have summer cabins is to make it look like vacation, but give yourself a lot of work to do. That's the genius of the summer cabin. Otherwise, you're laying yourself open to a vacation. A vacation is dreamed up by a woman who's looking at brochures of beautiful people who are having, obviously, a lovely time in scenic places. And she says, well, how about this? And you, who were brought up to be accommodating, goodness knows, you say, well, whatever you would like. I'll be fine with anything, really. It makes no difference to me. I can be happy either way. That's what you were brought up to say. So she takes you at your word that you can be happy either way, and she signs you up for this wilderness resort, which is like a prisoner of war camp. It's out there in the forest, and there are clouds of mosquitoes, and they are impervious to any sort of bug spray whatsoever. Bug repellent does not repel. It only irritates them, and they just keep on coming in greater and greater numbers. And the beds are punishing, and you eat this horrible POW food, and you are taken for forced marches by some smart botanist who asks you questions that enable you to demonstrate your ignorance in front of your own children. And you sit around a campfire and you sing, this land is my land, our land, your land, whatever, and smoke is drifting into your eyes, and you sit there in sheer misery, and your wife is unhappy and your children are unhappy, and it occurs to you, not just once or twice, but every day, the idea of abandoning your family, leaving them out there in the wilderness, and all of that because you didn't own a summer house, you see, which gives you an excuse to stay home and to work. It is always falling apart if you buy one in poor enough condition. The Enquists, David and Judy Enquist, the former pastor and his wife, were up at their summer house in Lake Wobegon, two people who we thought were separated, but here they were, and they were having a wonderful time out there, and we could hear music playing out there, the Rolling Stones, Brown Sugar, and they seemed to be dancing in their front yard, and they were drinking and having a wonderful time, and then they came to the Moonlight Bay Supper Club, and they were laughing and laughing and laughing, these two people who never did that when they lived in Lake Wobegon, and they were the Lutheran pastor and his wife out in public and eating steak dinners at the Moonlight Bay Supper Club and laughing and touching each other on the arm. And, oh, I can't believe you would say that, she said. And who? He said, who? What? What? It was so remarkable to see this. Marlene, the old church secretary, finally got up the gumption to walk up to them and say, weren't you two separated? And they said, yes, we've been divorced for 3 years. But we're good friends. Well, doesn't that shed light that we would rather not see? Do we even want to think about this? There they were. They've been divorced 3 years, and they were having a whale of a good time. What does this say about the rest of us? They walked out of the Moonlight Bay Supper Club, and they were walking very close together in a way that gave you the idea that there was something going on, and they were going back to their summer cabin, and they were going to sleep together. Can you do that after you've been divorced? What does Luther say about that? Is there some guidance in Scripture on this? We weren't sure. Judy Inkvist came to the bridal shower at Arlene Bunsen's house. She gave it for her nephew, Aaron, who's getting married to a girl from Seattle, Sally J. And she was there, Seattle girl, and the mother of the groom could not give the shower because she has a phobia of being in a crowded room. But Sally Joe was there, and about 30 women there in Arlene Bunsen's living room. It was a classic shower, and they played all those stupid games that nobody would ever play otherwise, and there were a lot of gifts. Sally Joe was interesting. She wore this kind of yellowish sundress, and she wore perfectly round black glasses, and she walked in, and they could not help but notice the tattoo on her left ankle, which was a string bean and then a vine going up her leg all the way up to and past the hem of her dress. It went up. How far did it go, we wondered. What was the meaning of this? Did this have to do with Jack and the Beanstalk, or what was the story here? We were very nice to her. So, I hear you are studying architecture. She said, "Yes, I'm studying architecture, but she's not interested in big buildings. She's interested in making very small buildings, sustainable living and energy efficiency. She's building houses that are portable, and you tow them behind your car." They said, "Like trailers?" No, she said, "Even smaller than that. These are 8x10 little rooms, and you hitch them to your car, and you can go live with anybody, and that's all you need." That's the trend of things nowadays, is less and less. People don't have landlines anymore. They have cell phones, and they don't need all of the things that people used to need. No, that's what we're going to do after we get married. We've promised each other, my love and I, that we will never have more personal possessions than you can put into a large suitcase. That's all we will ever have. They looked around at the pile of gifts, the mountain of gifts, as she opened them. There were two quilts, there were bath towels galore, there were three sets of mixing bowls, there was a mixer as well, there were two pairs of candlesticks. There were plates, a whole pile of it there in front of her. We had heard that they're going to be married in Seattle, and they're going to be married outdoors. We heard that Sally was going to invite all of her former boyfriends, and that there were a great many of them, and that she was going to sing a song that she has written herself entitled When My Body Is Next to Your Body. So we were interested in hearing more about that. And especially about the boyfriends. We asked about the wedding. She said, "Well, it's going to be outdoors, and we'll just say our own vows, and we'll get somebody to sign the certificate. My friends will be there to play music, and it'll all be potluck, and it'll be just, you know, it'll be very Seattle." We said, "Well, how about your parents? Will they?" "Well, I think we'll be there. My mother and her husband will be there. My father and his girlfriend, I'm not sure. They're out on a sailboat somewhere off the coast of British Columbia. We can't seem to reach them, but I hope that they can come." And then she looked at her watch and said, "Oh my gosh, I've got to go. I've got to catch a plane and go back home. Thank you all so much." And she was out the door, leaving all of these gifts behind, this whole mountain of quilts and mixing bowls and TV trays. And very nice young woman. Just, we weren't sure what to make of all of this. So people sat around and talked about everything but what they were thinking, which we are good at in Lake Wobegon. And one by one, people got up to leave, and they reached for the gift they had given her. And Arlene said, go ahead, just take it. You'll find another use for it. And so everybody took what they had brought and left. And when everybody had left, there was a dish towel left with a walleye, a picture of a walleye, an enormous fish leaping up out of a lake with a fierce look in his wall eyes and just leaping up into the air. She could not remember anybody who had given this gift, this walleye on a dish towel. It was ugly and yet fascinating in a way. It was something that nobody would want in their home, but they used to. And Arlene remembered a time when she was 8 years old and she had been sent up to Grand Rapids to visit her Aunt Anne. And she was sent out to play the way children used to be before the world became dangerous. And she went down to a park and she had heard of the giant walleye, Willie is in Grand Rapids and Grand Forks, I'm sorry. This is Grand Rapids. I'm confused because the sun is shining on me and I'm old. Have pity. And Wally the walleye, it was an enormous walleye. It was 25 feet tall, and you could look into its wide open mouth and this dark hole down there. And you could toss a coin in and make a wish. And the little girl, Arlene, looked at it, and then a voice said, what do you want? She said, I want to make a wish. Yeah, well, what's your wish? It was a woman's voice. It wasn't a man's voice. Arlene said, I thought you were a man. The fish said, well, what's the difference? What's your wish? What do you want? Arlene said, I want to be happy. Fish said, tell you what you ought to wish for. You ought to wish to lose a little weight, your little fatty cakes there. Happiness, doesn't exist. What else you want? Well, I want true love. Doesn't exist either. What else? Why are you up here and not in the lake? Why am I up here? I'm up here because I didn't want somebody to catch me. You ever have a sharp hook in your lip? It's no fun. Believe me, kid. Yeah. Well, do you like it up here? No, I don't like it up here. I'm a fish out of water. That's what I am. But, you know, what choice do I have? The child said, what kind of wish can I get for a quarter? And she tossed a quarter in, and she could hear it bouncing around in there. And the fish said, tell you what you can have for a quarter. Wherever you go, kid, wherever you go, whatever you get, it could have been worse. Okay? That's as good as I can offer you. And so she's remembered that all these years. And when you're extremely lucky, if you should be extremely lucky, and you should be rich, and you should be good-looking, and you should live in Seattle, and people tell you how lucky you are, you just look at them, and you say, it could be worse. And it can be. That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good-looking, and all the children are above average.